You're listening to The Oddscast, the original UFC betting podcast that's straight to the point. Hosted by leading MMA oddsmaker Nick Kalikas and MMA journalist Brian Heminger, they provide you the absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting. MMAoddsbreaker.com. Don't place your wagers without us.
Welcome to the Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on ESPN Plus 8 event, which takes place in Sunrise, Florida. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, Kyle Marley lost one unit on his free bet for UFC on ESPN Plus 7 on Marcelo Gomes. Kyle has his bets and fantasy MMA picks available now on MMAoddsbreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC on ESPN Plus 8 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on ESPN 2, ESPN, and ESPN Plus this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on ESPN 2 is a welterweight contest between Court McGee, who is 19-7, and Diego Lima, who is 13-7. Now, Nick, where did this fight end, and how has the public shifted things so far?
A couple quick shout-outs again before we start. Make sure you guys check out betdsi.eu. That's our sponsored sportsbook for this event and all the premium oddscasts we've had on. So hats off to those guys, and make sure you check them out. And also, as Brian mentioned, Big Marley 3, man. He's been killing it. If you're not buying his premium picks on MMAoddsbreaker.com, you're missing out. The guy's been producing a ton of cash. He's sharp as heck, and he's definitely worth checking out. Now back to this. McGee opened up -185, the comeback on Lima at +145. And now what we're seeing over at BetDSI is currently -161 on McGee, the comeback on Lima at +143. So line margins have to tighten up, and there's two-way action on this fight. And there's not a ton of action coming in either way. I mean, I think a lot of people are skeptical to bet this fight. I mean, let's face it. Both of these guys have definitely had their issues. You know, I mean, both of them are quality fighters. Both of them are very skilled fighters. But at the same time, obviously, they haven't had the best of luck as of late. Now, they did rebound. I mean, they're both coming off of very impressive wins. McGee coming off of an impressive win over Garcia. And then, of course, Diego Lima, the surprise knockout. I mean, not a huge surprise, but a bit of a surprise, the knockout win that he had over Laprise. So both of them coming in with some confidence. Both of them have solid wins. And, you know, this should be a good fight. How it plays out? It should be interesting. I mean, like I said, both these guys are definitely skilled. They're definitely well-rounded fighters. And they're aging fighters to some point. Now, to a certain extent, obviously, Lima's only 30 years old, but in fight years, I think he is beyond that a little bit. And of course, McGee, at 34 years old, the wars he's been in, I mean, his history, everything. I mean, he's definitely not in his prime, put it that way. But that said, both of these guys, again, can bang on the feet. I think Lima actually has a little bit better striking overall and is a little bit more dangerous, can be dangerous at the same time on the feet a little bit more. Now, he does have a suspect chin at times as well, so you got to be cautious with Lima. That's one of the biggest flaws in his game, is getting hit and his chin not holding up. Now, McGee does have a little bit underrated power, so that could be a possibility, but I think more so than anything else, I mean, McGee's not afraid to stand and bang with people for sure, but in this case, I think the path to victory for McGee is actually just mixing everything up, using his striking to set up some takedowns up against the cage and get the fight to the ground. He has to be careful because Lima has submitted, you know, people off his back, and he's very capable of doing so, but I think McGee's submission defense overall, he's never been submitted, if I'm not mistaken, and I think I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I should say I would be surprised if it happens here against Lima as well. So I don't think McGee loses by submission here, and I do think he ends up in top position at times as well. So both these guys are improving in some ways, like I said, but I think they're both a little bit past their prime. Now, as far as matchup goes, I mean, as far as Lima, he has a little bit more hype, and he's got a little bit more upside left in his career. If he could get on track and put a roll together, I think the UFC could give him a push still. I mean, his brother, of course, is one of the best, you know, in the world, and what he does, he's in Bellator, of course. So there's a lot of hype behind this as well. But that said, I still think stylistically, it's kind of a tough matchup here. And if McGee's, you know, chin holds up and he is able to outgrind Lima, I think he gets a W here. So it's hard for me not to pick McGee. I just think he's just a little bit more complete. And I think the wrestling, the combination of grinding, everything mixed together is probably going to be enough to beat Lima here. So I'm going to pick McGee, but honestly, people aren't betting this fight like crazy because it is a tough fight to call. So not a confident pick, but I am leaning McGee's way.
And I haven't been very confident with Court McGee lately, but I actually think this is a decent stylistic matchup for him. Now, both of these guys are coming off of pretty solid wins, with McGee beating Perez and Lima coming off of surprise knockout victory against Laprise. And I really think that on the feet, Lima should have the edge. I mean, he's got a significant power advantage. And for once in Lima's career, he's really facing a guy that I don't think he should be worried about getting knocked out. I mean, Court McGee is a decision machine. I think the last time he finished an opponent was 2010. So I don't think Diego Lima has to worry too much about the finish. So with Court McGee, McGee does push a decent pace on the feet, but I think his biggest strength in this fight will be shooting in for takedowns and putting his opponent on his back. And historically, when Lima isn't getting knocked out, his other biggest flaw is takedown defense. And even though he does have a good ground game, he has been stifled by wrestlers historically on multiple occasions. I mean, it happened even way back in the day for his first loss back in MFC. So Diego Lima does not have very good takedown defense. And even though Court McGee has lost a bit of a step at 34 years old, I think that if he closes the distance, he can definitely put Diego Lima on his back and keep him there. And even though Lima does have a ground game, McGee's pretty savvy on the canvas as well. Even though he's not pulling off a lot of stoppages or anything, he's aware of everything at least enough to defend against it. So on the feet, Lima does have some power, as evidenced by that first round knockout against Chad Laprise in his last fight. But for the most part, I just don't really feel like it's enough to take out McGee. I mean, McGee's only been finished by Santiago Ponzinibbio, and even then it took a battering. And Lima really doesn't have that kind of output, and he's not that good of a strike, as good a striker as Ponzinibbio. So I'm not really worried about that. And same goes with, McGee. You know, he doesn't really have a lot of power, and Lima should be able to throw pretty confidently, but that also will open up takedown opportunities for McGee. So, I just think the takedown defense is going to fail Lima, and I don't think that his ground game is going to overcome, McGee's top position. So overall, I'm going to favor Court McGee to pick up a decision victory, win two in a row here. Now, dropping down to the strawweight division, we have Angela Hill, who is 12-5, taking on Jody Esquibel, who is 6-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Hill open -210, the comeback, and Esquibel +160. Right now, what we're seeing over at Bet DSI is currently Hill -526, the comeback in Esquibel +422. So needless to say, more action coming in Hill's way for a good reason too. I mean, this is a breath of fresh air for Hill. I know she's taking this fight off short notice, and you know, there might be some question marks there. Typically speaking, in most cases, you know, when a fighter comes in a short notice, you got to raise an eyebrow here or there, but I think she's going to be just fine here because this is the type of matchup for Hill that she's going to thrive for. Honestly, Esquibel, honestly, she's a bit underrated. I mean, she's definitely a solid fighter. She hangs in there with really solid competition. She's got okay striking. She's just a very solid fighter. But the thing here is, I mean, Hill typically speaking has the most problems with girls that obviously like to get her to the ground and kind of expose that weakness that she's improving on. I mean, we know that she's getting better, but even in her last fight against Marcos, I mean, Hill was kind of exposed again. I mean, against a higher level grapplers, she's going to be in some trouble if they get her down. Hill still to this point, even though she has improved quite a bit, but Esquibel is not really that girl. She's not the one that's going to, you know, try to submit Hill. So I think Hill is going to honestly use her strength, and that's her movement, her amazing striking skills, and she's going to outpoint Esquibel. Esquibel's pretty tough. She's never been knocked out, but the accumulation of strikes, and I mean, obviously we don't see a lot of knockout finishes or anything like that in women's fights very often, at least, but this is the type of fight that as it goes, and if Hill's landing frequently, maybe she busts her up, you know, by round three, we start seeing some wear and tear, and it could be a finish there. But more so than anything, I think this is kind of a matchup where we're going to see Hill a 30-27, probably more competitive than we're all thinking, a little bit more, but still clear enough that Hill should get the decision to win here. So I understand why all of you guys are coming in, betting Hill straight at the early line. The line was definitely way too low. People are putting Hill in parlays as well. I get it. I mean, this should not be a loss for Hill. So it's hard not to pick her here. I do respect and love her improvement. I mean, she's, you know, like I said, a striking-based fighter. She's definitely worked hard to get her ground game and her takedown defense up to par. Now, like I said, matchup wise, this is just a fight that she's going to be able to kind of take a breath and say, hey, I'm going to go out there and just light this chick up. So it's hard not to like Hill in this spot. So I won't waste more time. It's pretty clear that everybody pretty much agrees. So Hill is the pick.
Yeah. My only issue with this fight is that Hill's taken it on very short notice. I mean, Jessica Penne was originally scheduled to take on Esquivel and seemed like that was an opportunity for Penne to bounce back. But now we're having Angela Hill step in, and you know, Hill is just a really dangerous, powerful striker, pushes a great pace on feet, and Esquivel, while she is a bit of a savvy veteran, that she just really doesn't offer that much. I mean, losing to Carolina Kovalkiewicz is understandable, but then also to lose to Jessica Aguilar, who is, I would say, definitely on the tail end of her career, and she lost pretty convincingly. That really showed that Esquivel doesn't really belong in the UFC, especially in a competitive division like the women's strawweight division. So Angela Hill is just going to, I think she'll light her up. I mean, Esquivel does train out of a good gym at Jackson's MMA, but I think Emily Kagan was another like kind of fighter of that similar out of Jackson's that competed, and Angela Hill got her in her UFC debut, and Hill just lit her up and ended up getting a finish. So I think that could happen the exact same way. It could almost be a repeat of history. I expect Hill to win. I expect it to be convincing victory for Hill. And I think there's a serious possibility that Hill gets a finish along the way. So my pick is going to be Angela Hill, I think by TKO. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have Jim Miller, who is 29-13, taking on Jason Gonzalez, who is 11-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Miller -155, Gonzalez +115. That was the opening line, and right now what we're seeing over at BetDSI is -141 for Miller. The comeback on Gonzalez is currently at +125, so not much craziness going on here with this fight either. I mean, this is another spot where it's pretty tough. I mean, Gonzalez has been out for almost 2 years. Jim Miller, of course, I mean, he's 35 years old. At one point, I say it probably every Outscast, I mean, the guy was one of the better lightweights in the world for sure. He was a top-tier lightweight. But, you know, through the years, obviously, wear and tear, the wars he's been in, it's definitely taken it on him now. He's showed a little bit of life, you know, off and on the last little run he's had. I mean, he's faced some decent competition. I mean, and he showed some more life against Alex White, actually, a couple fights back. But, I mean, he's definitely, I believe he's lost, like, what, 5 out of 6 fights or something like that. And, you know, against decent competition, obviously. I mean, it's not like he's been, this is probably the worst fighter he's faced out of the group, honestly, but it's still another tough test. So what I'm trying to say is Miller is definitely another fighter that's past his prime. This is going to be kind of a trend on this card a little bit. So, I mean, we're going to see some fighters that are a little bit on the decline and getting matched up with younger fighters that could move up the ladder and get a great win on the resume. And I think that's exactly the matchup here with Gonzalez and Miller. I mean, Miller is definitely the more well put together fighter. I think he's definitely more complete overall. He's a good striker, solid strike. He's a good wrestling and good submission game. We know that. We know what he's capable of. Gonzalez, though, is more dangerous overall. I think across the board, he's long. His stand up with the clinch game is definitely dangerous. He's very effective in that clinch game. And, also on the ground, he's capable of submitting you as well. So Gonzalez, with that length and his finishing ability, is definitely a dangerous, dangerous opponent for most people, but he does have some defensive flaws as well. I mean, he lacks some takedown defense. He's chinny as well. So those are two things that you can't really depend too much on Gonzalez, but it's a shame because, man, I do think offensively, this guy is fun to watch and he's definitely game. So with the 2 year layoff, with this fight getting matched the way it is, I think this is actually a good spot for Gonzalez to come in here and get a win and get back on track. I know, I mean, look, they put him in there, Gonzalez, with Gregor Gillespie in his last fight. I mean, that says a lot. Now, obviously, most of us were not expecting him to pull that win off. Gillespie is a future title contender that they're pushing, you know, so that was kind of geared towards him getting a W. But still, Gonzalez was in there. The UFC thought that much of him to put him in there as a threat. And of course, obviously Gillespie passed, you know, with flying colors, but still, I think Gonzalez is that type of fighter that if he gets on a little bit of a roll, gets a little bit more confidence, tightens up that defense a little bit, man, this guy can be a threat at 155 to a lot of opponents. So for me here, I'm going to lean actually with the dog here in Gonzalez. I think that again, just the timing of this fight, the way these guys match up, I do think that Gonzalez could be a little bit more effective, whether it's in the, on the feet, whether it's in the clinch. And then again, I know Miller has a really good submission game, and I think overall he's a little bit more technically sound on the ground. But I mean, we've seen some weaknesses and holes getting, you know, as he's, his career progresses, showing up in his game as well. And he's not coming off a very good performance in his last fight himself. So that said, I like Gonzalez here. I mean, it should be another crazy fight. I'm expecting a finish probably either way here, but I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Gonzalez because I think, like I said, the UFC is going to probably give him a push. He gets a big win. I think there could be some good coming from Gonzalez in the future as well. So I like what I see in him. I just hope he fights smart and tightens up that D a little bit because this is a winnable fight for him at this point. So I'm going to pick Gonzalez to win.
After that four-fight losing streak, I thought that Jim Miller was kind of on the rebound heading into that last fight. But, I mean, he looked so terrible against Charles Oliveira. I mean, he was bad in that rematch, especially considering he beat Oliveira the first time they faced each other. So perhaps I'm overreacting here, but I just think Jim Miller's on his way out again. I mean, I went from career resurgence to on his way out again in one fight, and MMA can be a what have you done for me lately sport, but that's just my opinion on Jim Miller at this point. I mean, he's kind of got that generalist approach and just that jack of all trades, master of none type, although he is pretty good on the ground. But that being said, I just don't think he has a ton to really threaten Jason Gonzalez. Miller doesn't have that much power. Gonzalez doesn't have a chin, but I don't think Miller can find it easily. And then on the ground, Miller does have okay wrestling, and he has an excellent ground game. But Gonzalez is very big, and he was able to get up from Gregor Gillespie a few times, and Gillespie's a much better wrestler than Jim Miller. So I think Jason Gonzalez is actually going to be able to keep this fight upright. I think he has a ton of power. Gonzalez has a very dangerous kicking game, and Jim Miller has taken a lot of damage in recent years. And I think that if Jason Gonzalez connects with a good head kick or some punching combinations, Miller could be in some big trouble. I mean, there's also the possibility that Miller gets Gonzalez on his back and chokes him out. I would not rule that out, but I think that this fight is kind of set up for Gonzalez to actually pull it off. I expect as long as it stays standing, Miller will probably be pushing forward with his boxing approach, but Gonzalez can fire back with some pretty nasty head kicks, and considering his size, those head kicks can do some serious damage, and if any of those connect, I think Miller's going to be in big trouble, and I think Jason Gonzalez possibly doesn't just win this, but he could take Jim Miller out with a knockout. So I'm going to side with Jason Gonzalez as well. Now, this takes us to the ESPN preliminary card. And also in the lightweight division, we have Gilbert Burns, who is 14-3, taking on Mike Davis, who is 7-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Burns open -270, the comeback +190. Currently at BetDSI, we're seeing Burns -250, the comeback +210 on Davis. So line Burns have tightened up a little bit. A bit of a head scratcher for those of you guys that are unaware of Davis, Mike Davis out there. He's taking this fight on short notice, obviously stepping in. And what a fight he has in front of him, man. I mean, making your official UFC debut against Gilbert Burns, especially he's been through lately. I mean, Burns is definitely a fighter that we all know how good he is on the ground. I mean, if you make one mistake, that's his specialty. The guy is a ground whiz. I mean, the guy is one of the best ground fighters in the UFC on the roster. Burns is phenomenal on the ground. But that said, he's a little bit more confident, and he's getting a little bit better standing. He's been working on it. I mean, he's one of those grapplers that fit in that category that's not just a one-trick pony anymore. I mean, Burns is a legit threat even on the feet. He's proven that time and time again. But against Davis, I'm not sure that's a path of victory he wants to take. I mean, Mike Davis, if you look back at his UFC Contender Series fight, I mean, he was the one that was getting hyped. He was a prospect over Yusuf, actually, that everybody was expecting to get the W there. Obviously, Yusuf pulled off a great win. That was a heck of a fight. I urge guys on Fight Pass. And there's actually more fights from Davis on Fight Pass as well, if you guys are looking for some footage out there. That said, I mean, Davis is a really good fighter. He's not bad. He's got a wrestling background, but he's basically a prospect with big power, very good striking. He's got knockout power in both hands. I mean, he's definitely fun to watch, and he's a threat. So here's the problem. I mean, if Burns is not able to get this fight to the ground, I mean, sure, Burns can maybe land and possibly get a KO win over Davis. But I think out of the striking, Davis is actually a better overall striker, and I think Davis is going to have the advantage on the feet over a guy like Burns. Again, Burns will have his moments, but I think overall steady flow of striking goes to Davis. And again, we've seen Burns in the past get knocked out. He's been dropped in several fights as well. So I don't think he wants to get an exchange here with Davis, because Davis is legit. Like I said, overall, and he's the prospect that a lot of people were expecting to make the UFC a while back. So I'm glad they're giving him this short notice opportunity, and he can seriously win this fight. This is definitely a dog or pass situation. As far as a pick goes, I mean, you have to kind of lean a little bit more towards Burns though in this fight. Cause again, he is receiving on the feet, and one mistake from Davis on the ground, Burns can end this fight. So that's why, as far as being a small favorite to win this fight, of course it should be Burns. I mean, he's got the attributes. He's got the track record. I mean, and the ground game, like I said, is just phenomenal, but stylistically, this could be a very tough matchup for him. Davis also, I should in this. I mean, he has taken this fight on short notice, but in the past, he hasn't really had too many conditioning issues that I've seen, at least. So I think he'll be in shape and he'll be ready and he'll be game to come in here and perform well. So again, if he doesn't make a mistake, now I'm saying that again, because even in that Yusuf fight, if you look back, there's a couple times where he actually caught in some bad positions where if Burns was in those same positions around the neck or whatnot, and he could have finished that fight. So Davis has to fight smart if he has a shot here. So with all that said, that's why, again, you have to lean a little bit more towards Burns as far as a pick goes, but the value dog here with Davis. So it's a dog or pest situation. I wouldn't recommend betting Burns in this spot. This is just one of those head scratcher type of fights that, I mean, obviously the UFC is pretty high on this guy as well. They're giving him a chance on short notice. Like I said, Burns has been a great fighter, and I think he's improving by leaps and bounds, and he's fun to watch. So this is a great matchup. So the pick is Burns, but I wouldn't lay that chalk. It's a dog or pass situation.
This originally was going to be an Eric Wisely against Gilbert Burns fight, and I think that would have been a pretty bad blowout already. And then now instead it's going to be Mike Davis against Gilbert Burns, which potentially could be a more interesting fight. That being said, my issue with this fight is that Mike Davis is a guy that typically fights in the featherweight division. So Gilbert Burns is going to have a pretty significant size advantage over him in this fight. I expect Gilbert Burns to, at least in terms of physicality. I mean, Davis actually is, I think, an inch taller, but Gilbert Burns is going to be so much stronger. And I expect Gilbert Burns to take this to the floor, and I expect Gilbert Burns to take Davis out on the canvas, because Gilbert Burns has one of the best ground games in a lightweight division. That being said, Gilbert Burns also has fallen in love with his hands a little bit. So you go back and you look at his last four fights, and Jason Sago knocked him out. Dan Moret knocked him out. Faced Dan Hooker, got knocked out. And then, Olivier Aubin-Mercier, he ends up winning the decision, and had, Mercier hurt on the feet a little bit. So again, was showcasing his stand-up. So I'm definitely a little concerned, because Gilbert Burns has fallen in love with his hands. And if he does that in this fight, then there definitely is the possibility that Davis could knock him out, because Davis has some serious power, even though he can fight at featherweight. There is definitely the danger that Davis represents. I mean, this was a guy that had a ton of hype as he was entering that UFC, Tuesday Night Contender Series, and the hype kind of got stolen from him by Yusuf, because Yusuf won that decision. So now Davis is trying to get that, get it back. And he did win his next fight or two after the Tuesday Night Contender Series and earned this opportunity, but it is on super short notice against a big, strong, established lightweight. And I just think that's a little bit too much to overcome. Granted, if Gilbert Burns has a really bad fight IQ, Davis could overcome that just with a good shot, because Davis has some power and Gilbert Burns can get knocked out. So, because, as good as Burns is with his improving power and stand up, his defense still has a ways to go. So I'm picking Gilbert Burns, but I'm definitely concerned if he turns this into a slugfest on the feet. Now, dropping down to the women's strawweight division again, we have Carla Esparza, who is 13-6, taking on Virna Janjiroba, who is 14-0. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Esparza opened the favorite, minus 135, Janjiroba plus 115. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, we're seeing Janjiroba minus 118, the comeback on Esparza plus 105. So line has flipped, and we're actually coming in Janjiroba's way. I get it. I mean, if you watch her perform, I mean, she's the Invicta strawweight champion, definitely a very talented fighter. I mean, faced decent competition. Again, you can check out her fights on Fight Pass. You'll see a few on there. But that said, man, I mean, this is an interesting matchup because Janjiroba is the type of fighter that's a ground specialist. I mean, she has decent wrestling. Her stand-up's not bad. Again, she's not out of, you know, her element completely on the feet. She does have okay boxing, but it's nothing to be a huge threat about. She's going to have a little bit of reach advantage over Esparza. I actually think out of the two, Esparza has the better striking. Her striking has improved quite a bit. If you look back at some of her fights, you can tell that. I mean, Esparza had to work on it. She's been working diligently, and it's getting better. So I think the strike battle goes to Esparza. Now, the wrestling is what's going to come into play here, because Esparza, obviously, we know what her background is, and it's just that. It's wrestling, right? And she does have a pretty decent, underrated ground game in her own right. But against excellent grapplers and excellent, obviously, jiu-jitsu practitioners, she could be in some trouble at times. But in this spot here, if Janjiroba cannot get Esparza to the ground, I think Esparza can win this fight. So this is interesting. I know a lot of people are really fond of Janjiroba, and I'm sure the UFC matched this fight to bring in you know, a new blood again, and they put her right in the mix against a very talented fighter, former champion in Esparza. So they're very high on Janjiroba as well. So she's definitely capable of winning this fight, especially on the ground, more so than anything else. So this should be, if it hits the scorecards, I think it'll be fairly competitive. But I think if Esparza does not get up, I think she wins a fight probably on the scorecard. So the more I dug into this fight, the more I'm kind of leaning Esparza's way, to be honest with you. So I can kind of understand why originally, you know, Esparza was the rightful favorite coming in, and then the line flipped. But I do understand why the dog money and the, you know, the plus money value on Janjiroba got gobbled up as well. So this is an intriguing fight. This is a pick 'em type of fight, and the line kind of indicates that, and it's fairly accurate, I think, at this point, because it should be a great fight. It should be a very competitive fight, but I have to side with Esparza, because I think, again, based on her track record and the stylistic matchup, if she does get on her back here and just get out grappled on the ground, she should win this fight. So I think she's going to use that wrestling in reverse, keep the fight upright, and probably outbox Janjiroba to a decision win. So it should be competitive, but I'm going to side with Esparza and go against the overall lane, with everybody mostly picking Janjiroba in the spot.
And I understand the hype on Janjiroba. She's a talented fighter. She's entering the UFC as the Invicta Women's Strawweight Champion. She picked up a couple stoppages inside Invicta. And watching her fight, she's talented. She has a strong ground game. She has very aggressive submission skills, passes guard quickly. She's fun to watch. She really is. The problem is, though, that Janjiroba isn't really that much of a threat on the feet. She has a decent lead jab, but she hasn't really sit down on her strikes. And watching Carla, the improvements in Carla Esparza's striking, she actually does have a little bit of pop in her hands now. Her boxing has improved. So I favor Esparza on the feet in this fight. And then when it does go to the ground, yes, Janjiroba is dangerous there, but she's also a little over-aggressive at times. She leaves a lot of space when she's attacking and trying to advance to mount quickly and set up submissions. And if for some reason Janjiroba was able to take this fight to the floor and put Esparza on her back, I don't think she could keep her there. Esparza's too good of a wrestler. I expect Esparza to turn the tides on her. I know Esparza got, you know, beat up pretty badly by Tatiana Suarez, but, you know, that's Tatiana Suarez. I mean, she is the best grappler or and wrestler in the division by a landslide. There's really nobody even close. And as good of a ground fighter as Janjiroba is, Esparza is the better wrestler. So if this fight does go to the floor, I expect Esparza to be the one in top position, and I don't think Janjiroba could submit her off her back. I mean, Esparza wasn't submitted by Rose Namajunas when they fought for the title back in the day. Esparza really hasn't had that many issues on the ground other than Tatiana Suarez from top position. So I think Esparza wins this on the feet. I think she can win this on the ground from top position and drop some ground and pound as well. So Carla Esparza is going to be my pick. And I think she hands Janjaroba her first career loss. Now, moving all the way up to the heavyweight division, we have Andrei Arlovsky, who is 27-17 with 2 no contests, taking on Augusto Sakai, who is 11-1-1. Now, Nick, the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one.
Sakai open minus 130, the comeback on Arlovsky minus 110. And right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Sakai minus 143, comeback on Arlovsky at plus 127. So line margins have tightened up a little bit more actually coming in Sakai's way. I mean, what you're getting here with Sakai is a guy that has knockout power against an aging veteran in Arlovsky. Again, this is another scenario where they're bringing in kind of new blood. This is the second fight for, of course, Sakai. He had a fight with Sherman and was able to get a finish late in that fight, which was, hey, I'll tell you what, it was a test for him. I mean, he definitely had to dig deep and he looked good by the fight ending for sure, Sakai. And again, a Bellator veteran, the guy's been around, so he's got some solid experience. And again, he's a threat because he does have some knockout power. Arlovsky though, man, the resurgence of Arlovsky has been something else. I'll tell you what, I'm a bit surprised myself because this guy was one of the most chinny heavyweights that you've seen. And then the last several fights, he's not been knocked out. His defense has tightened up a little bit. He's absorbing some of those punches better, even with that crooked nose that he's been, his nose is just destroyed and he doesn't care. That tells you what kind of warrior this guy is, Arlovsky. He's a true fighter. I mean, he lives, for the sport and that's amazing. You have to take your hat off for Arlovsky. He doesn't have to be fighting right now. You know, so he's accomplished a lot. Former UFC, he just loves to fight and it showed. And again, even though he's on a bit of a skid and, you know, and again, he's on a decline of his career, surprisingly, he hasn't been getting clipped. So he's facing another knockout artist that the UFC matched up here. And let's face it. Let's say it like it is. Arlovsky's been fed to the sharks for some time now. I mean, he's the type of guy that they're using as a gatekeeper, that they're trying to promote these heavyweights. Now, I've said it time and time again, too. The heavyweight division in the UFC overall is weak. It's weak in every, you know, aspect of MMA, every organization in MMA. There's not, you know, UFC has the strongest roster, obviously, in heavyweight, and it should. But still, I mean, if you fiddle through that heavyweight division, there's a lot of flawed fighters in the heavyweight division. So it's not one of those fights that are one of those divisions that you're going to see a ton of studs coming out. So Arlovsky could stay relevant in a division like this for sure. So Sakai is trying to make some waves here again. He's matching him up with another guy that they think they could give a push if he beats Arlovsky in this spot. So looking back at the Walt Harris fight in his last fight, it ended up being a no contest. Of course, Harris just recently got busted by USADA. I believe he got a 4-month suspension. So it was overturned. I'm not mistaken, to a no contest. But if you look back even at that fight, it was fairly close. Arlovsky's been in several close fights. Even when he's losing the decisions, he's game. So this is going to be another doozy, man. I tell you, I mean, Sakai, again, it's made for him to win this fight, but this is kind of a situation where I look back at his Congo fight. If you look at the Czech Congo fight for Sakai, he was competitive in that fight, but Congo was able to, you know, keep his chin on, keep his head on and not get knocked out. He's another chinny guy that's kind of had a resurgence as well for Congo. So take your hat off to him as well in Bellator. But Ed, I mean, he wasn't able to knock Congo out. Now, since then though, he did, I believe, KO his last 3 opponents. So, I mean, he's back on track with the KOs for Sakai. I mean, he's got 10 of his 12 wins are by knockout, I believe. So he's that type of fighter. But Arlovsky, with the chin that he showed and with the defense getting a little bit better and with his ability to strike and just his overall game is better. I mean, if you look at these two fighters, Arlovsky is the better fighter across the board. He's a better striker, technical striker. He's a better wrestler. He's a better grappler. I mean, the only thing that he has going against him is his age and, I mean, the fight years. So, and again, that chin, he's been knocked out 10 times in his career, but again, not out of the group that he's recently fought. It's been holding up. So with all that said, I'm going to lean towards Arlovsky here again. Now, UFC's matching it for Sakai to get the win, but it could backfire, and it's happened to them in the past, and, you know, it'll probably happen again. So I think it's a dog or pass situation. In fact, if you look at MMAoddsbreaker.com to earn our free picks, again, Big Marley 3, Kyle Marley, actually gave out Arlovsky as our free pick as well. So he has faith in Arlovsky could get in this spot. And actually, I do as well. I think Arlovsky can get it done. Now, of course, you got to be careful, though, because if he does end up getting knocked out, your money would go out the window. So be cautious. I wouldn't go crazy betting this fight. But at the same time, it's hard not to pick Arlovsky. He's the better fighter here. And from what we've seen recently, this should be another close fight. If he hits the scorecards, it'll be another split decision type of fight, no doubt in my mind. I mean, that's just the fights that Arlovsky's had. So with all that said, I'm still leaning his way. I'm going to pick Arlovsky to win. And I'm a bit surprised as well. But, I mean, his resurgence, is real. There's no question about it. Even if he's not winning all the fights, I mean, he's definitely performed better than I expected, and hopefully he keeps it up, because I do not want to see this guy suffer knockout loss number 11. I mean, that's not good for anybody. So the pick is Orlovsky.
And believe it or not, I'm going to go Orlovsky as well. I just have not been that impressed with Augusto Sakai. He doesn't look like he's in that good a shape when you watch him fight. He does have some power in his hands, and he can stick out for 15 minutes, as you saw in the Chase Sherman fight. He ended up not finishing that until almost the final minute of the third round, which is a bit surprising, because I think a better fighter would be able to take Sherman out pretty quickly. Bob Sakai does, you know, push a decent pace on the feet. He does have a little bit of pop in his hands. He can throw in combination. His issue is that he can be stymied a little bit if by a good veteran. I mean, you saw in his one career loss, I mean, Czech Congo basically just pushed him against the fence for three straight rounds. It's one of the worst fights you'll ever watch in your entire life, and you can just thank me later that you didn't have to watch it, and I did for you. But so Sakai can be thwarted by a veteran that knows a few tricks, a savvy veteran. I think Orlovsky can do the same thing. Orlovsky, you know, his chin isn't great, but it's been better lately for some reason. He's been able to absorb the occasional shot. And I think Sakai, he's a bit more of a accumulation striker. So I think it'll be a little tougher for him to take Orlovsky out on the feet. And Orlovsky can push this into the fence. I think Orlovsky can slow the pace down. Orlovsky has picked up a few takedowns along the way in recent fights. And Orlovsky on the feet isn't that bad. I mean, he picks his moments, but his stand-up is still decent. And he's been able to hang in there against some pretty tough fighters. So I'm going to side with Andrei Orlovsky. I think Sakai's a bit overrated here. I was not that impressed with what I saw in his UFC debut against Sherman. And I think this is a bit of a, even though Orlovsky is a veteran that's been around forever and it would be a good feather in Sakai's cap, I think that this is a bit too much for Sakai at this point in his career. So I'm going to side with Andrei Orlovsky. I think he wins a close decision. Now, moving on to the main event of the preliminary card on ESPN, we have Ben Saunders in the welterweight division, who is 22-11-2, taking on Takashi Sato, who is 14-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Sato open minus 165, the comeback on Saunders plus 125. What we're seeing right now is 2-1, minus 204 for Sato, the comeback on Saunders at plus 179 right now at BetDSI. I'll tell you what, this is another one of those fights. I mean, obviously we know what the making here is. A veteran in Saunders coming in with the debuting, again, going against a debuting guy in Sato. And Sato has knockout power. Saunders obviously has a bad chin. So this was geared for Sato to win this fight. There's no question about it. Again, it's one of those situations that we were just talking about, Orlovsky. Saunders is a warrior. He's been another guy that doesn't really have to fight anymore. And, you know, he's accomplished a lot in his career. He never got the, you know, the title in those big organizations. Bellator, he got close, you know, a couple times, but he's always been an upper tier. In fact, at one point, I do believe that Saunders was one of the best welterweights on the roster. I mean, he was a top tier welterweight in his prime, at least. I'm not saying he was a title worthy guy, but at the same time, he was definitely a really solid fighter. He's a threat with that length everywhere the fight takes place. I mean, he has good striking, good kicks, obviously a good clinch game, man. I mean, a lot to like about him. And on the ground, Saunders can submit you. I mean, he's proven that time and time again. So this guy is a finisher, but 7 knockout losses. That's just terrible. I mean, you don't want to see these guys get knocked out like that. And again, they're matching him up with a guy that he wins by knockout. So it's hard not to pick Sato in this fight, but I tell you what, this is a winnable fight for Saunders. Cause if you look at Sato, he's got good power on the feet, but he does have some defensive issues on the feet as well. And then on the ground, I mean, obviously Saunders has a way better ground game than Sato as well. But if he does, Sato does get top position and he's able to react quickly, he might be able to drop some ground and pound and obviously finish Saunders that way as well. Cause if you look at Sato's ground and pound, it's pretty impressive. I mean, the guy definitely throws some good elbows. He's got some nasty power, like I said, even if he's in top position. So Sato's path to victory here is by knockout. The UFC brought him in. I mean, he's got decent competition, outside of the UFC, obviously fighting in Pancrase. And again, I mean, check out obviously, Fight Pass, and you could watch some of Sato's fill up. That said here, it's not a confident pick, but I do have to pick Sato again. I mean, I hope in a way it doesn't play out like I think it is. I think Sato is probably going to get the knockout win over Saunders. I don't want to see the guy get knocked out again. I mean, it's just one of those things that these guys get knocked out time and time again with all the brain injuries, concussions, and all the stuff going on in the NFL and in other sports right now. I mean, Saunders is definitely at risk here. If the longer he fights and the longer he keeps on, you know, absorbing punishment, not a good thing. So I kind of hope I'm wrong here. I have to side with Sato. I mean, the UFC's matching this up again for him to get the knockout win, and that's exactly what he can do. So if he fights smart, he could probably get it done. I'm going to pick him. But it's not a confident pick, honestly. I mean, as far as the betting window goes, I think it is a winnable fight for Saunders, so I would probably stay away from it. But the pick is Sato.
Yeah, my main issue with this fight is that Ben Saunders has been knocked out brutally four times in the past few years, and including three in his last four fights. So I think three of his last four losses have all been brutal knockouts. And, I'm definitely concerned. I mean, it seems like that's what the UFC is trying to do here. Sato is a knockout artist. He's had 9 knockouts in his career. 8 of them have been in the first round. So if a knockout's happening, Sato's probably going to be picking it up quickly. But if it doesn't happen, if Saunders is able to slow the pace down, if he's able to get this in the clinch where he's at his strongest, Saunders has a really nasty Muay Thai game with knees and elbows on the inside. And then obviously on the ground, Saunders is very dangerous, both on his back and from top position. He has a really good rubber guard. He has a lot of nifty tricks with that long length that he's able to utilize on the canvas. So Saunders is capable in this fight, and there's definitely paths to victory for him. But, I mean, that chin has really started to fail him in recent years. He's been knocked out, I think, 7 times in total in his career. And it just seems like some of those knockouts are getting worse and worse. And Sato's a guy that can take guys out quickly. And even though I think Saunders is the more well-rounded, experienced fighter here, and Sato isn't exactly coming off of a great string of performances. I mean, it's only 2 fights removed from getting submitted himself by a UFC veteran in Mikhail Franco. So Saunders has a path to victory here, but I think the writing's on the wall with this one, and it seems like the UFC is expecting fireworks in the final preliminary fight on ESPN, and Sato has a very good chance of racking up that brutal knockout. So I'm going to side with Sato. I think he does get the knockout, but if he can't take Saunders out quickly, watch out for Saunders to pull off something later in this fight. Now, this brings us to the main card. In the lightweight division, we have Roosevelt Roberts, who is 8-0, taking on Thomas Gifford, who is 14-7 with 1 no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Roberts open -245, the comeback on Gifford at +175. Right now over at BetDSI, it's -370 for Roberts, the comeback on Gifford +313. So obviously more action coming in Roberts' way. Rightfully so. I mean, this should be a pretty good fight. Gifford is not a bad fighter. He's a finisher in his own right, and you definitely have to be concerned about his submission skill. I mean, that's what he specializes in. That's what he does best. His guillotine chokes are nasty, and he's slick at getting them done and getting the job done with those guillotines. But overall, I mean, he's fought some okay competition outside of the UFC, so I'm glad they're giving him a shot. But stylistically, this is a nightmare matchup for him. If he does not get that guillotine choke, Roberts is better everywhere. The funny thing is, I mean, Roberts is usually the longer fighter. He's got some reach over most of his opponents. And these guys kind of have similar builds, but make no mistake, Roberts is the more explosive fighter. He's a lot faster. He's a lot better. I think he's the better wrestler. And I think overall, he's the better ground fighter. I mean, and we're talking about guillotine. This could be a guillotine battle. Roberts has nasty guillotine chokes as well. So that's a similarity that both of these guys have. But like I said, I think it kind of ends there. I think Roberts is just superior overall. And if he does not get caught in that guillotine choke, which hopefully his camp and him realize that, I mean, that's basically Gifford's best way to win, he should roll here in this fight. So most of you guys that came in agree with that. I do think that that's the way it's going to play out here. If Roberts doesn't get caught in submission, he's going to win this fight, and he'll probably win it impressively as well. He's a guy to watch out for. I mean, this guy has some skill. He's got some talent. Again, for the 155-pound weight class for lightweight, man, this guy has, like I said, a good build and good skill to go a long way. I mean, if they keep on matching him up properly and taking baby steps with him, it rubs confidence and he keeps on improving. I mean, we'll see how far this guy can go. I like what I see so far. So the pick is Roberts, and this is a guy that a lot of people are throwing into parlays and whatnot as well out there. I mean, that's one of the reasons the line keeps on climbing, and I understand it. And again, I wouldn't blame you, even at current price right now. Roberts is a good guy to throw in some parlays for sure. I think that he does get the job done, and he is my pick to win.
Yeah, Roberts is definitely dangerous, and this is an intriguing fight mainly because people don't really understand how similar these fighters are. Both are long, lanky fighters in the lightweight division. I mean, Roberts is coming in at, I think it's 6'2", so there's a lot of size here, and they actually have similar strengths. Roberts has just a brutal guillotine choke that he's able to sneak in with those long limbs of his. I mean, you saw that in his UFC debut against Daryl Horker. I mean, just nasty. I mean, he had Horker sideways along the fence trying to escape that guillotine choke, and he wasn't able to do it. And Thomas Gifford actually has racked up guillotine choke victories in his last three fights. Now, one of those wasn't – it was declared a no contest. It was a really kind of strange situation where – Gifford choked his opponent out in like 51 seconds and got a technical submission, choked him unconscious, and then maybe held on to it too long or something happened that was kind of strange, and it was kind of a scary situation with an unconscious opponent, and the fight ended up being overturned to a no contest. But Gifford has a very dangerous guillotine choke. But that being said, that's really where the similarities end, because Roberts is the superior striker. I think he has a little bit better pop in his hands. He's more fluid on the feet. He uses his length a little bit better. And then Roberts also can shoot in for takedowns successfully. And I really don't see Gifford doing that very often. More often than not, Gifford is accepting the takedown and then looking for the guillotine choke. So as long as Roberts protects his neck, if he does shoot for a takedown, he should be in good shape, because Roberts doesn't just get victories from submissions. He also, when he gets top position, he has some pretty good ground and pound as well. So, you know, this is a guy that has a bright future in the UFC, I think. As long as Nick mentioned, that they push him along at the right way. And I think by throwing him in there against somebody that's making his UFC debut in Gifford, who is more familiar with the regional Midwestern scene, I think, that's the right step. So Roberts should get the victory here. He's the better fighter, and I expect at some point along the way he does get a stoppage victory. Now, this brings us to the bantamweight division, where we have John Lineker, who is 31-8, taking on Corey Sandhagen, who is 10-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Lineker opened -245, the comeback on Sandhagen at +175. And obviously with a high opener like that against Sandhagen, it's not going to last long. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, we are looking at currently Lineker -141, the comeback on Sandhagen at +124. A lot more reasonable and understandable here in this spot. I mean, this should be honestly the fight that everybody's looking forward to the most. This will be the fight of the night. At least it should be. It should play out fight of the night. These guys are both going to bring it. I mean, Lineker is just a madman. I mean, he's obviously, if you look at his resume, he's faced quality competition and he's beaten most. Outside of TJ Dillashaw, the guy's looking phenomenal. I mean, the guy is just a heavy-handed, stalking you down, knock you out type of fighter. Fearless, got a great chin. I mean, just absorbs punches and punishment. Now, of course, he's got decent takedown defense overall. And the problem with TJ Dillashaw exploiting that a little bit is, I mean, TJ Dillashaw has outstanding wrestling. So that's going to be interesting to see if Sandhagen kind of, you know, follows that path to victory a little bit as well, to try to get some takedowns here. I'm sure, obviously, he's trying to do whatever he can to get the job done here. This right kick battle that's, you know, that pursues here in this fight should be amazing. Sandhagen is a nasty fighter in his own right. I mean, he can beat you, obviously, with all sorts of skill on the feet. I mean, he's kind of a wild man, but it's at the same time, he's not like he's a sloppy wild man. I mean, the guy delivers. He's a fender as well. And then on the ground, obviously, I think he's got a better ground game than Olenker overall, too. So there's a lot to like about Sandhagen here. And with his length overall, I think he only has a couple inches of pure reach, as far as pure reach advantage, I believe. But I mean, with that length and, you know, with his legs and the height and everything, he's going to tower over Lineker in the spot. But again, Lineker's always on the smaller side, so it's not something he's going to be totally lost in. And again, the way Lineker fights, man, he's a tough out for everybody. So again, this is another spot though where the UFC is matching this for, I mean, obviously they're not trying to get Lineker beat, because Lineker, they definitely always push the way this guy fights. I mean, he's always going to be relevant. And you know, he's always going to be in the upper tier, at bantamweight, or, you know, back in the day, obviously at flyweight as well. So there's no question about it, but it's intriguing because they're giving Sandhagen an opportunity to pick off somebody just on that level. And Sandhagen has looked, I mean, so far in his UFC run, I mean, he's really looked better than he's ever looked. I mean, if you watch some of his fights, even, you know, obviously he's faced some, you know, tough spots, but wow, man. I mean, the heart that he showed and, you know, being able to pull through and get the wins that he has. I mean, Sandhagen is a fun fighter to watch. So I just think he's going to be a little bit more busy. I think he's got the more accurate striking as well, and he's better on the ground. So I'm going to kind of lean towards Sandhagen here to get the upset. So I understand those of you guys that gobbled up plus 175, hats off to you, man. I mean, win or was definitely a great line take. So good luck to all those that took Sandhagen at that price. But I think it's still a dog or pet situation, honestly. And I'm not going to underestimate Lineker, man. The guy, like I said, he's a beast. He's such a tough out, and this is a big step up in competition for sure for Sandhagen. But I think it's one that he can possibly win. So this should be good. Again, out of the whole card, this is the fight that I'm looking forward to the most, and it should live up to expectations, you know. So the pick is Sandhagen to pull off the upset win in what should be a classic, instant clap to fight.
I'll admit, Corey Sandhagen has really impressed me in his UFC run so far. He's pushed a great pace. He corners his opponents. He unloads and does a lot of damage. And then he also has shown a decent ground game as well. So, you know, this is a guy with what seems like the complete package in the bantamweight division. But, man, there's so many people that have run into John Lineker and then they just leave a different fighter. I mean, Rob Font, somebody that comes to mind. And Corey Sandhagen, he has been hurt on the feet in the past, and John Lineker just has that crazy power in the bantamweight division. Even though Sandhagen is going to be 8 inches taller than Lineker, he only has an inch or two reach advantage. So I'm really not expecting Sandhagen to be towering over Lineker and being unable to be hit. If Sandhagen wants to get his boxing game going, I mean, he's going to have to wade into danger. John Lineker is the type of fighter that can end a fight at any moment's notice because he has that a type of power that can change the course of a fight any moment. And Lineker has done it multiple times throughout his career, honestly, I think the craziest thing I've ever seen was Lineker just being kind of slowed in his tracks with a strike, because that's how good his chin is. He can just take strikes and then dish them out. And, I don't think that Corey Sandhagen, if they get into that type of firefight, I don't think Sandhagen can survive it. I think, Sandhagen will get his licks in, but the second he eats a couple consecutive really nasty shots, then Sandhagen's going to be diving at Lineker's legs for takedowns. And even, Sandhagen does have a pretty good offensive wrestling. Lineker really has only been stifled by the best of the best in terms of wrestlers. Like, Ali Bagotinov basically just wrestled completely against Lineker. And then TJ Dillashaw, one of the best strikers of all time in the bantamweight division, he basically turned into a wrestler when he fought John Lineker and decided to just take him down repeatedly. So, and Lineker does have some takedown defense. So Sandhagen is really going to have to, if he wants to get that part of his game going, I mean, he's going to have to be aggressive in there and force Lineker to open up and create some opportunities for takedowns. And I just don't think it'll be that easy. So I think this does stay standing for the most part. I think Lineker lands some nasty shots. And even though Sanhagen hasn't been knocked out yet in his career, I think he at least gets dropped along the way and Lineker wins at least decision, if not a knockout. Now, moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Glover Teixeira, who is 28-7, taking on Ion Cutelaba, who is 14-3 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Cutelaba opened minus 135, the comeback on Teixeira minus 105, and right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is almost a pick'em. Teixeira minus 109, minus 103 on Cutelaba, so line margins have tightened up, basically a pick'em type of fight here, and it's another interesting fight and another case where the UFC is matching up newer blood against the old veterans that have a lot of respect in upper tier type of fighters. And Teixeira is a phenomenal fighter. The only problem at this point is obviously, again, years, age, everything's kind of, father time's kind of working against him a little bit, and he has showed a bit of a suspect chin at times as well, and Cutelaba is going to look to exploit that. That's his path to victory here. But Teixeira, obviously, he's got some good boxing in his own, got some good wrestling, and on the ground, I mean, he's just an elite level fighter. If Teixeira gets Cutelaba on the ground, it can be a wrap fairly quickly. So Teixeira has a path to victory, obviously. I don't think he wants to stand and bang with Cutelaba. He's going to look for those takedowns, and he's going to look to get this fight to the floor and do what he does best and finish the job there. But I like what I said. I mean, he's definitely improved, and I think if he can stuff those takedowns, I think he can knock Teixeira out. He could be one of those guys that gets a awesome feather in his cap against a very solid, again, veteran, respectable opponent. And again, matchmaking-wise, that's exactly – be misleading here. That's exactly what they're looking for. I mean, if Cutelaba gets a win over Teixeira again, they could give him a bigger push, and that's a solid win for him as well. And I think that he probably does. So hopefully he avoids the ground, because you don't want to, I mean, his ground defense has definitely improved. Cutelaba has, but not enough here. There's no question about it. If Teixeira does get it to the ground, he can exploit that weakness for sure. So the pick is Cutelaba. I'm picking it because I think his takedown defense is going to probably keep it upright, and he's going to be able to land more damaging blows on the feet and maybe get Teixeira out of there. So again, it should be another fun fight, passing of the guard, the torch sort of thing here. But I think Cutelaba is on the rise, and Teixeira, unfortunately for him, is getting used as a gatekeeper type role right now. So Cutelaba is my pick.
And I completely understand the Cutelaba pick. Glover Teixeira is slow now. He doesn't have a very good chin. When he entered the UFC, he was known for being a really dangerous, powerful striker. And at this point, the younger, up-and-coming light heavyweights, they can all do some serious damage to Teixeira on the feet. I think that Teixeira can get knocked out by just about anybody that is 30 and under in the light heavyweight division. But that being said, Teixeira does still have a very good ground game. And if he can get Cutelaba on his back, there's definitely a path to victory for him. I mean, the guy has great top control, really jiu-jitsu black belt. He can advance to mount quickly and then just start pounding away from top position, or just grab like an arm triangle or something. So if Cutelaba gets put on his back, I think it's over. But if it doesn't, Cutelaba has good power. He pushes a strong pace, and he can go for a full 15 minutes. So I think Teixeira is going to be in huge trouble for however long this fight stays standing. This fight is going to be finished almost certainly, whether Teixeira gets it to the floor and taps Cutelaba out, or Cutelaba knocks Teixeira out. And at this point, especially with the damage Teixeira ended up taking in that last fight against Roberson, a middleweight that moved up, I think Cutelaba has more power than Roberson. I think that Cutelaba can finish what Roberson started. And I expect Cutelaba to be the winner by knockout. So Cutelaba is going to be back. Now, dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Alex Oliveira, who is 19-5-1 with two no contests, taking on Mike Perry, who is 12-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Oliveira open minus 175. The comeback on Perry plus 135. And what you're seeing right now over at BetDSI is minus 172. The comeback on Perry plus 153. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. It's a tough fight. Honestly, I know a lot of people are favoring Oliveira in this spot here. I understand it. I mean, as far as overall skill, there's no question, again, who the better fighter is, because I think Oliveira is far more well-rounded, because he's the type of fighter that obviously he's got some length. He's going to have a little bit of reach. Obviously, I think Fox pure reach, only an inch of height over Perry. But to go along with that, he also has some decent striking skill. But more so than anything else, I mean, in a matchup like this, his ground is where it's at. And again, he's capable of beating Perry in that route and in that way is get this fight to the ground, take back something like that. Now, again, he doesn't have to choose that path because he's dangerous enough on the feet as well. So he can stand and bang, or he can take this fight to the ground and do well. I mean, Perry's not the type of guy that he's going to have to worry about, like Gunnar Nelson, for example. I mean, Oliveira, like, we should mention that fight. Holy cow, what a strong, hats off to Gunnar Nelson for surviving and getting that W. But he's not going to have to fear the ground here at all. In fact, Perry's going to be the one having to fear the ground. And you know what? It's a bit disappointing because Perry is a pretty solid fighter. Obviously, he's started working up the ranks, up the ladder, and man, this guy has power. He's got good wrestling. He's fun to watch. I mean, it's hard not to like Perry, man. I mean, he's just got that attitude. He promotes himself well. He's fun to watch, but at the same time, fight IQ at times, man, with some of these fighters. I mean, Cerrone's, you know, a good ground fighter, by far more superior than Perry. Perry mixes up on the ground or whatever, attempts to get over the ground. That's not smart. I mean, that's the kind of stuff Perry needs to avoid. He has to fight with a smart IQ. He does not want to get to the ground with some of these guys that are superior on the ground with him at all. So hopefully he learned from, you know, a valuable lesson in that Cerrone fight, and he's going to try to wrestle in reverse and keep this fight up backwards as much as, or up standing, I should say, upwards, and try to knock Oliveira out, because that's a possible path to victory for him. I mean, even a decision as this fight goes, if Perry does not get submitted on the ground, I mean, he can hang in there and outstrike Oliveira, I think, in a 3-round fight. So, of course, obviously, with the power that Perry has and the finishing ability Oliveira has, you know, there's a good chance this fight doesn't hit the scorecards, and it should be another fun fight. But skill set for skill set, it's hard to pick Oliveira. I'm not as confident as everybody else out there that's picking him. I think that, you know, there's still so many holes in Oliveira's game as well that you have to be cautious while picking him or betting him. So this might be a spot that Perry comes in here and does pull off the upset win and, you know, fights a little bit smarter and gets a really nice win on his resume as well. But I mean, as far as a pure pick goes, again, I have to side more towards Oliveira because he's the more complete fighter. He has more ways to win this fight, and it's hard not to pick him. But again, I wouldn't recommend laying that chalk on Oliveira in this fight, even though I do think he probably gets it done here.
Yeah, this one can be a little tricky. I mean, Oliveira, Perry, they're pretty evenly matched. Oliveira, I would say, is the more well-rounded fighter, because he's a lot more dangerous on the ground than Perry. But on the feet, this is probably to Perry's advantage. Perry has good power. He pushes a decent pace. Perry also has that ability to mix things up. I mean, he actually has those spinning elbows. There's some attacks that Perry can throw that I think Oliveira might not see coming. Like, I gained a little bit of respect for Perry because he was holding his own with Donald Cerrone on the feet when he beat Paul Felder in a stand-up fight. So Perry has, you know, definitely improved in that department, but also a glaring weakness in his fight ability is the ground. And if this fight does go to the floor, and I do think it will, Alex Oliveira should have a significant edge. Oliveira's picked up some ground and pound victories. He's damaged opponents from top position, and obviously Oliveira does have the submissions to fall back on. He's racked up a couple submissions in the UFC. So if this fight goes to the floor, I think Mike Perry's going to be in serious trouble. And even though Oliveira has fought at lightweight before, I mean, he missed weight multiple times in the lightweight division, and he should be a similar size with Perry. So I don't think Perry will have that much of a size or strength advantage here. And, Oliveira, if he really wants to win, I think, just needs to close that distance and get this fight to the canvas because, even though Oliveira come from an actual striking background, it's the ground where he'll have the edge. He's got to utilize that well-roundedness in his game where he's dangerous both on the feet and the floor and just take the fight to where his opponent isn't strong. So I expect Alex Oliveira to get this fight to the floor, and I think that he gets the win when he does get the fight to the floor, and I think it'll be close because Perry's going to get his points on the feet, but the longer this fight is on the floor, the better the chances are for Oliveira to get the win. So I'm going to side with Oliveira. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the heavyweight division, we have Greg Hardy, who is 2-1, taking on Dmitry Smolyakov, who is 8-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Hardy open -265, Smolyakov +185. Right over at BetDSI, Hardy's been bet up. It's -312. The comeback on Smolyakov is +271. I mean, obviously Hardy, popular, hyped. A lot of people were expecting great things from him. I mean, again, fight IQ, experience, all came into play in his last fight. And he is still a raw fighter. I mean, there's no question about it. But man, I mean, the athleticism, obviously he's an elite level athlete playing in the NFL and being not just a normal average player, being an elite player in the NFL too in his prime. So a lot to like about Hardy. I mean, you get this guy trained the proper way. Man, I mean, definitely you could push this guy towards a title shot if he gets a lot of experience. He's not nowhere near that right now, but I mean, with the power and athleticism he possesses, with good training and continued, you know, work up the ladder and matching him carefully, I think, you know, the guy can keep on improving. Smolyakov is not exactly, you know, an easy. I think this is going to be one of the hardest tests for Hardy that he's had thus far, of course. Smolyakov got cut from the UFC. He went out and won a fight, and then the UFC brought him back. But again, I mean, they brought him back to kind of feed him to Hardy here in this spot, so make no mistake. But if Smolyakov fights and he's able to get this fight to the ground or able to exploit some of that still, you know, some of that raw ability that Hardy has, I mean, Smolyakov could possibly pull off a shocker here and get the W. Because, again, I don't fully trust Hardy all the way, but, man, with the explosiveness, I think he does end up connecting and just putting Smolyakov's lights out eventually. So hard not to pick Hardy here, but, man, if you're laying the chalk 3-1 on Hardy with the holes in his game still – you know, again, he's developing as a fighter. So, I mean, I don't think it's worth the risk here, but I wouldn't be surprised if he does win this fight by knockout. And in fact, that's the way to go. If you're going to bet Hardy instead of laying that chalk, just bet him by knockout. You're going to get a little bit of a better price. You're still going to have to lay chalk. But because that's the way he's going to get the job done if he wins, but still, I mean, you're probably not going to have to lay 3-1. So that's the way to go with this fight. So Hardy's a pick. It's hard not to pick him here. Again, matchmaking is geared towards him in this fight as well. And I think he does get it done.
Yeah, there's not much to say about this fight. I mean, Greg Hardy had a huge, embarrassing fight in his UFC debut where getting disqualified. But unless something crazy like that happens again, I expect Greg Hardy to not just win, but to absolutely obliterate Smolyakov. Smolyakov is supposedly, you know, a master in free ring, but I haven't seen it. He looked slow. He looked sloppy. He looked raw in both of his UFC fights where he just came away getting smoked by guys that didn't even end up being that great of heavyweights in the first place. So taking on somebody in Greg Hardy that has a ton of knockout power and is a tremendous athlete, I expect Hardy to not just win, but to take Smolyakov out in the first minute or so. So hopefully this is like a makeup performance for Hardy's, you know, awful UFC debut, but I do think that Hardy does make it up here. So Greg Hardy is going to be my pick. Now moving on to the main event of the evening in the middleweight division, we have Jacare Souza, who is 26-6 with one no contest, taking on Jack Hermanson, who is 19-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open and how has the public shifted things so far?
Jacare Souza opened -170, the comeback on Hermanson at +135. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, we are seeing Jacare Souza -196. -196, the comeback on Hermanson at +174. Line margins have tightened up. There's a little bit more action coming in as a whole on Jacare Souza, which I understand. Early on, though, there was some action coming in on Hermanson as well, line back and forth, but steady. It's been gradually increasing as we get closer to fight time with Jacare Souza as the rightful favorite here at the spot. I tell you what, I gotta be the first to admit, I've underestimated Hermanson in several of his fights. I mean, he's fought some decent competition. I believe as a whole, like 6-2 so far in the UFC, and those losses were to Ferreira and Santos, but, you know, and which those are kind of questionable losses. Obviously, Thiago Santos, man, I mean, the guy's just a beast on the feet. I mean, he could beat a lot of guys. I mean, you know, obviously setting himself up for a title fight or whatnot. He's got, you know, John Jones' future opponent. So that's, you know, a respectable loss. But the loss that's glaring to me a little bit more is Cesar Ferreira, Mutanch. I mean, in that fight, he ended up getting submitted on the ground, and he's facing a far more superior grappler in Jacques Rosa in this spot here. So, but that said, I mean, you got to look at some of his wins. Like I said, he's 6-2. I mean, he has some solid wins. I mean, another great grappler. I mean, in Lightus, he got the W over there. Now, it was late in that fight, and that was a fight that I expected him to lose. But, you know, he did what he had to do, got on top, got a good spin, and finished that fight. His last one over David Branch. I believe David Branch is a better overall fighter than Hermanson, but Hermanson did end up getting the win. You got to take your hat off to him. I mean, he looked great in that fight as well. So his ground game is definitely a threat. The striking, though, not so much. I mean, I'm not really impressed with Hermanson's striking. It's just his ground game was where it's at with him, honestly, more so than anything else. But here's the problem with this fight. Jacare Souza is better everywhere than Hermanson. The only thing Jacare Souza does not go in for him in this fight is his age and obviously the wear and tear that chin has taken. So in my opinion, Jacare is a better striker. He's a better wrestler. He's a better ground fighter. If Hermanson wants to take this fight to the ground, he's going to get submitted quick-like. His only path to victory on the ground is try to drop some serious heavy leather quickly against a guy like Jacare on the ground and try to test that chin. Outside of that, I mean, maybe landing a crazy shot on the feet and, you know, putting Jacare Souza out in that regard as well. But Jacare Souza should school him in this fight across the board. So unless he's had a major drop off, and I mean, here's the problem. Father time to everybody. But I still think that obviously from what we've seen recently with Jacare Souza, he has a left on take, especially to beat a guy like Hermanson. Again, I've underestimated Hermanson in the past, so maybe I'm wrong here, but I don't really think I am. I mean, across the board, Jacare is a superior fighter. There's no question. And in fact, you know, it'd be kind of a shame if he loses to somebody like Hermanson. Again, I'm not trying to disrespect him, but it shouldn't happen. I mean, in my opinion, Jacare is a world-class, elite-level fighter, and Hermanson is a solid fighter that would kind of hover around the upper levels or mid-level type of fighter. He's not as good as his recent run has been, put it that way. So I think he gets exploited here. I think there is still some value under 2-1 on Jacare. So Souza here for sure. I mean, like I said, the only path to victory for Hermanson is getting the knockout. He's not going to win a decision over Jacare. And I think, in fact, Jacare can beat him on the feet. He can knock him out possibly. Or if it gets to the ground, it's going to be fun to watch Jacare perform here as well. So the pick is Jacare Souza. I'm kind of astonished by how many people are picking Hermanson in this spot. I don't agree at all. I mean, hey, I hope the line drops even more. So let's see what happens here with this fight. I'm going to pick Jacare Souza to win this fight. I think he has just a clear path to victory. In many ways, he's just the better fighter. So the pick is Jacare to win this fight.
And I'm right with you. I've been all aboard Team Hermanson for a few fights now. I've always felt that this guy has been underrated in the division, but when he gets top position, he's absolutely brutal with ground and pound and very aggressive in hunting for submissions. And he's been able to tap out some guys with some decent ground games in his last couple of fights, and Mearshard and Dave Branch. But that being said, at some point you gain that recognition and you start getting matched up against the best of the best. And this is a really, really tough matchup for Hermanson. Hermanson is not a good striker whatsoever. And Jacare has just that explosive athleticism with a ton of power on the feet. He can stop just about anybody in the stand-up portion of the fight. And if Hermanson is stuck standing for even a few minutes, I think he could get knocked out. And then if and when this fight does go to the floor, I think it'll be Herman pursuing it, because that's the way he wins fights now, is he gets guys on their back and then he either beats them up with ground and pound or finds an opening to get a submission. And he's going to be hunting for takedowns, and I think that that's going to play right into Jacare's game. I mean, Jacare is one of the greatest Brazilian jiu-jitsu artists of all time. And Hermanson, I think, is in for a world of hurt on the canvas. I expect Jacare could potentially just twist him up like a pretzel. I think this fight is just a really, really difficult matchup for Hermanson because, as Nick mentioned, Jacare just has the edge just about everywhere except age and potential durability. But, I mean, even there, Jacare has, for the most part, except that when he got TKO'd by Robert Whittaker, but for the most part, he's held his own in terms of taking punishment from some of the best strikers and most dangerous stand-up artists in the middleweight division. Jacare at this point is right there among the top contenders in the middleweight division, and Hermanson, while he's been on the rise, I think that the rise does stop here. So Jacare is going to be my pick. I think that he knocks out Hermanson. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on ESPN Plus 8. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send it to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.